Thanks, love. Thanks for telling me recording is in progress.
Recording in progress.
Right then. What are you, don't you, Nick?
Drink coffee.
Yeah. Good shout. I found some pods in the cupboard this morning that I didn't think I had.
Oh, that's great.
Isn't it? In your pocket, isn't it? Brilliant. Anyway, that's a small talk.
Right, I'll ask. How to approach clients being unresponsive to emails for check-ins, not joining Facebook group, reviews, wasn't included in price before, so not sure how to firstly get them to value it, then actually fill them in. They all say they are very happy with the service, which makes me think I don't need to change much and don't want to keep badgering them. A go.
Good question. A lot of PTs are probably going to go through this, and obviously, hopefully, whoever asked that question, you now realize off the back of the last few webinars that the breakdown there is normally just as you brought them in, so maybe just walking them through each process so they feel so they see the context of it, it's there, why it's beneficial for them, and how to use it. And obviously, we're going to go into more of that on Thursday night's one, so that'll help massively. I'm going to have a bit of a debate with myself here, because part of me, you could just be happy, seem to need it, and essentially they're happy and telling you they're happy, and you could just wait until they hit a bit of a brick wall with progress, they drop in motivation, and then bring it up to show a solution to a problem. Where, I don't know, if Nick's my client, Nick's then started to struggle, he's not making progress. We have a bit of a chat, and both a weekly check-in would be great to keep him on track, right? So you could come in from that angle. You could come at it from that angle. Waiting for them to hit a bit of a brick wall, and then you present one or all options to them so they can see the value in them. Now, my other debate and argument, and it's up to you which one that you go with here, is that essentially that's a bit of a reactive process, just waiting for something bad to happen for them to then realize how important these things are. So with that, I would probably start to be a little bit proactive and spend 15 to 20 minutes before a session, just asking them some questions to get them to reflect on what potential barriers do they see coming up over the next few weeks, over certain things that they've got coming up and all of that. And then you could maybe align one of the features to what that barrier is, so you could be really proactive instead of reactive, because most of your clients will tell you to your face that everything's fine and they're happy, but a lot of them will need extra support away from the sessions, and that's what you want to deliver. And I know I've given two ends of the spectrum there, proactive and reactive, but actually you could argue that both of them will work for different types of people. So it obviously it's entirely up to you, but they need to see how that, because at the end of the day, if they see it as they're not paying for it, they don't understand it, they don't know why they need it, it's no wonder why they're not accessing it. So my advice would be, I'd probably lean towards the proactive version. I know I've just had a massive debate with myself, but listen, I just want to create some options, and sit down, explore barriers. So what could come up? How could they see them overcoming them barriers, and what type of tools have you got in the business that could help with them, i.e. the review, i.e. the check-in, the Facebook group. The Facebook groups are another one, is in a sense of they need to see how that's going to, again, how that is something that they need to be around. So maybe it's that you ask them what type of support that they would need away from the session, what more support they would need to understand nutrition, X, Y, Z. And maybe you put mini webinars on, or you do a live Q&A like this or whatever in the group to make them think, actually, yeah, I really want to go and watch that, see that, take part in that, or whatever it is, So yeah, I know there's a few options that I threw at you there, but it just depends on you. And it depends on how well you know your clients to know how to position each option. Anything you'd add, Nick?
I'd probably opt for more of a proactive route as well. I agree that you could argue both sides.
Yeah.
But when it's a reactive position, you're always on the back foot and you tend to react by trying to solve the problem and telling, which then ultimately doesn't end up in a good scenario.
Yeah, and the reason why I shared the reactive one is because there is some people that you kind of, it's like, I know this sounds really bad and it's a shit analogy, but it's like kids, isn't it? You can see, like I've got two kids and you can see that they're going to do potentially something wrong, but they're going to learn from it. And then you give them the opportunity to learn from that problem that they've got wrong or whatever it is. It's the same with clients sometimes. Some of them, they just need to learn by going, actually, yeah, I needed this check-in and that would have helped me through this last couple of weeks where I've been on the piss and I've ate all of the food and I've put weight on and all of that. So there is some people that will, and you'll know your clients better than I do, where that reactive approach, it might suit them. But I agree with Nick. The more that you can be the proactive version, then the better. 100%. Next question then. Let's have it. Just want to make sure I've got it. How would you structure an inquiry call, questions, things like that, etc.?
The same way I'd structure a consultation, but maybe obviously I know who's asking this, so I know in this, to put context behind it, this is to generate more value and rapport before the consult. So very similar to the way I would structure a consult, but a mini version. I would structure in a way where I want to get to know them a little bit, maybe a little bit more informally rather than really digging into the detail. So I think like a good starting point would be framing that. So it's a chance for us to get to know each other a little bit, chance for us to, for me to understand roughly what you need and what you're looking for. And then if I feel I can support you in that, we can move forward. So it's that kind of sets it up as a very kind of general open conversation. Kick the session off with something around, you know, what prompted you to reach out? I think that's a great, or in other words, that's a great kind of starting point, because they're going to go straight to what they want, what they need, what they're looking for. And then you can build a conversation, just being genuinely inquisitive around that. I feel asking them about their lifestyle a little bit, in regards to work, family, what they like doing on the weekend, et cetera. I just think that's just a good general kind of rapport building structure that will set you up. I don't think there's anything more that I'd add into that, because from those types of questions, general lifestyle, why they've reached out, you inquisitively kind of respond and have a conversation off the back of that. So that's what I'd say. Keep it simple. Do you need two separate routes for one-to-one and online, e.g. pre-consult, consult, onboarding?
In short, no, you don't. You'd kind of want it to be the same system. You want to create the same system, in my opinion. Like, we talk about cold leads, for example, making sure that we do a pre-consult and pre-consult call because you don't really know them, then into a consult and then convert them. Like, even if that was a warm lead and it was on the gym and it was someone you got to know on the gym floor, there's still legs in doing that with every single person and not making an assumption and getting to know them really well. So I would say no, I would keep the same system for both one-to-one online and online, because at the end of the day, coaching is coaching, and the service that they go into will be off the back of your understanding of them and which suits them and their lifestyle, competency, self-efficacy, confidence best. So no. Next one. How can you deal with potential clients? Just want to make sure. Oh no, sorry. Do you think it's possible to move fully online too soon?
Question. A really bad answer this is. It depends on the person. I think it does. I think it does massively depend on the person. Like, you've got to think about face-to-face, let's be honest, you could have very little IT tools and be very successful face-to-face PT. You're going to struggle if you really, really struggle with IT moving online. So I think that's kind of a bit of a, and I know you can learn this stuff, but that's a consideration. I don't think you can move on too soon. Okay, let me put it this way. I think there's massive, massive value in coaching people face to face. I just think there is. I just think there's such a lot to gain from working with people face to face that you can, that are transferable skills to move online. So if someone would say, should I go straight online or have very, very small amount of experience face to face, I would probably say give it a little bit more time and gather your coaching skills up a little bit, and just being in the environment, you know, being in the environment, it allows you to get to know kind of your market. It allows you to get to understand the industry more versus the online world, which is very subjective, I would say. But on the other hand, I think, you know, online coaching, depending on what you're framing that as, if it's just programming and no actual face-to-face coaching virtually, you know, that's quite an easy gig, so to speak. You know, you're programming, you're giving feedback off check-ins based on data probably and opinions. So that side of things, I would say, is it's like anything. You can just build your experience off the back of that. If you're doing virtual coaching, I think there's a huge amount of, I think you can move on too soon, but I'm really having an argument in my head now.
I was like that with that first question, because
but look, I think
there's actually no right or wrong answer. It's a bit,
there isn't, general, but I it's think a general there's a lot
bias, isn't it? Experience and bias.
There is, but I think like considerations like the IT consideration, I think just general life experience, because being self-employed, working from home, working online takes a certain amount of accountability and work ethic, which I think and feel, I'm not painting everyone with the same brush, but you know, if you're younger, like I'm not generalizing here, but if a teenager, early 20s, like that takes a lot to double down on. I'm not saying that that's everybody whatsoever, but you know, I think a certain amount of life experience with talking and conversing with people and having that communication skills needs to be even better online. So I think those are the way I would judge it. Those are the ways I've got to judge it. If you feel like you're competent in your communication skills, you feel like you've can really double down and giving yourself a working schedule from home. And, you know, you can deliver an online service, you know, your IT skills allow you to deliver an online service to a certain degree, which you can always develop. I think go for it. Don't know if I answered the question then, but anyhow.
No, you did. You obviously turned around and said that you'd be better off with experience, and the more experience you can get, the better of an online coach you get, you will be. And I agree. I 100% agree with it. I think one of the biggest and best attributes that we have as coaches that we can progress over time, and it takes time, is that technical knowledge and technical ability and technical competence. And I don't feel like you can get that as an online coach.
But this is why I say it depends on what service you're delivering. Like, if I'm just writing a program, I think you can bypass that because there's no coaching in it.
Yeah, but it depends. That's why I say it depends where you're at, isn't it?
If you're doing virtual sessions, like, the experience of how you cue people, understand what they're feeling when they're going through movements, getting feedback from clients as they're doing that movement, having experience in movement assessment and verbally cueing people to do the movement so you can assess them and then give them feedback. I just think it's that side of things. I don't think you can... Generally, I think you're better off getting a decent amount of experience, basically.
I agree. We could talk about that all day.
We could, couldn't we?
Yeah, we could, Nick. Yes.
We could, yes.
Yes.
How can you deal with potential clients, members in the gym, believing bullshit from other PTs? It is more talking to the team about their knowledge or giving education out to the members and hoping they believe you.
Is it more talking to the team about their knowledge or giving education out to members and hoping they believe you? I think it's a bit of both, if I'm honest. Depends on the relationship that you've got with the personal trainer who's chatting shit. Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. I think you are a quite experienced PT, the one who's asked this question. You're probably one of the most experienced PTs in that team, at that gym, from what I know of. And I think there's legs in asking permission to offer advice to support someone who hasn't got that element of knowledge, so maybe that you could help them, I think, absolutely. And I also think that as long as it doesn't affect you and your business, then you shouldn't worry about it too much. And then I also think if it does affect you and your business, then it gives you, hopefully it gives you the opportunities to go and spread the good word a little bit more. And maybe that's certain things that you do, like, I don't know, workshops, seminars, webinars, events, education sessions, interacting with people on the gym floor. I think there's a bit of both to be had. And if that personal trainer takes it personally, then it just shows what type of, where they're at in their career. They're insecure, they don't want to take advice, and that's a bit more of a fixed mindset. And we've probably all been there at times. It kind of, a lot of people see that as an attack, don't they? But if you go about it in the right way, like ask permission off the back of what you've heard and support them and stuff like that, I don't see it as a bad thing at all, but I would do a bit of both. But as Nicholas says, and he robbed the quote from somewhere else, don't get furious, get curious.
I would also, I personally feel that you're in a bit of a losing battle and a very frustrating battle if a member says, I've heard this, someone so-and-so told me this, and you say, no, that's wrong, da-da-da-da. It's just back and forth. So I think a good response to that would, what do you think, how do you feel, what do you think of that? And if that was, what experience have you had in that, but what do you think about that? What do you think you should do? I think that reflective questioning, instead of butting heads a little bit, probably get you a more open conversation for them to kind of be open for you to explain, if that makes sense. I don't
know if it does. Next question is, I have started a daily email to my small list with hopes to grow my list, that's going to be, isn't it? Grow my list and engagement with my audience. Would you say it's okay repeating what I also post on social media, or do email need to feel more exclusive?
You can 100% repurpose content for email. 100%. People are going to open different things. Remember the percentage of people who will see you on social media. So 100%. But I also think it's an opportunity to elaborate a little bit more on some of the points that you might put on social media. So I think that, you know, if you're dying, you know, if you're putting in small captions into the points and using bullet points, etc., in your social media posts, it enables you via email to use the same post, but to maybe go into a bit more context or add a little bit more depth to the story behind that content. So the answer is yes, I do believe you can, but also see the opportunity of elaborating a little bit more. When presenting an offer at the end of a consultation, should I list the prices of the features alongside clarifying their need for the benefits or just the price?
Should I list the prices of the features? Sorry, I'll just stop listening for a second. I didn't mean to be ignorant. Should I list the prices of the features alongside clarifying? No, you shouldn't list the prices of the features. You basically deliver to them what they need. Deliver to them what they need as the whole service, and just make sure that you highlight that they're paying for all of them. All of them are relevant to them because they direct benefit. They direct the benefit and need that they need to meet to get to where they want to be, but they pay for that whole service. Because what happens is, as soon as you start to basically price it a little bit, like, I don't know, like a menu, like these are the prices, this is the price for check-in, this is the price for monthly review, Facebook group, all of that, then they'll probably start to barter and go, well, I don't need that, or I think I'll be all right with that. I'm not sure I need that, because they don't understand the context to it. But as long as you can go, right, this is the service that you need off the back of my understanding of what I've got to know you over the past week or two, all of it is relevant. And I will talk you through now step by step on why it's relevant. That's important. You need to show context as to why the check-in is relevant for them and not just the task. Why the Facebook group is so great for them to be in, even if they've not got an actual Facebook account. Why the monthly review is so important when it comes to their dips in motivation and from their past. Why the program is needed for whilst they're away from you, and the accessibility of them getting it in the app with videos to help them have structure. Because in the past, they've had that breakdown of not knowing what to do in the gym and doing the same thing. So you're basically marrying up the need and aligning it to the direct benefit, and then going, that's what you need as a full service. And all of them are chargeable features. And I would just outline that. Does that answer the question? It does, doesn't it? Next one. Would you recommend increasing prices for clients that have been with you 6+ months when you worked out there should be an increase of over £150? One of my first clients was, I was undercharging loads, but didn't realize it at the time.
As long as they can feel the direct benefits of why you're increasing it. Length of time with you isn't the reason. Not saying that your suggestion it is, but I think if you can link the elements of your service that you're providing this person directly to it helping them achieve their goal and being a, like, really fundamental parts of the support that you provide, then yes. That starts with 100% a review and going back to the goal setting, going back to the needs analysis, going back to aligning their barriers, etc. So, but then also when you're doing that and you're reconfiguring their program, I think you need to give them another option as well. So especially if this person's been with you 6 months, you know, they've probably come quite a decent, you know, from where they were before to where they are now, they're probably a lot more competent, a lot more confident. So it might not necessarily mean that you take this person from where they're at now to another price point higher. It might mean that, for example, they stay on the current price point, but they might drop down to hybrid or online or something around those, or small group training or something like that, if they don't feel they can go to that price point. So yes, I do, but with a lot of questions behind it. I think you need to assess where they're at, which comes through a review. And yeah, match the different elements of your service to the challenges and the support they need to help them achieve their goal. That's one option. If you've got a couple of clients that are doing that, the same boat, then I might do a bit of a blanket email out to them, telling them about the new price point, explaining behind the benefits of why you're increasing it, what's happened before in the past. And I think just be open and honest, just like you put there. And if they are not in the position to move up to that price point, then here's another option for them. Online, hybrid, you can maybe consolidate a few of them into small group training and whatnot. So yeah. I have a client who paid for the month. Then 1 week in, they got injured and need to take 2 to 3 weeks off. How do I deal with this regarding payment? Should I refund the remaining 3 weeks and start once back, or change prices to online with no one-to-one sessions? Any tips on how to deal with this would be greatly appreciated.
I was on mute then and I just started and everything. Honestly, I would just ask the client. I would ask the client, lay out your options and just put it to the client. I think that shows honesty, transparency. It shows that you want to include them in the process. You're not just going to clearly, obviously, just take the money and expect for them to lose that in them sessions and all of that. I would put it on the client's toes, them two or three options that you've got there. Which one would you prefer to do over the next kind of few weeks? And then, depending on what they decide, work out a bit of a strategy to try and help them to stay engaged, whether that's just they do a bit of a weekly check-in. Maybe they just pay for that. But yeah, I would ask the client. I know that's probably a really shit answer and you wanted some other solutions. But if you're being really open, honest and transparent with the client, if you lay out them two, three options, the client will probably... Well, clearly they'll pick the best one for them and that's the right thing to do at that time. So that would be my advice. So Darwin didn't have a question, but last night he had a question. Can you remember what it was? Oh, no, I've just forgot it as well.
You didn't write it down. Lead generation. Something about lead generation.
No, it was being, was it transit, being online? Was it lead generation online? Was it? It was lead generation online whilst he was the whole COVID thing, isn't it? Okay. There you go. There's your question. What support would you give him to lead?
Keep that one to the end. Keep that one to the end. Keep rolling.
Flipping heck. I don't know who you think you are.
You shut your mouth.
You fucking make your own rules up.
You shut your mouth.
I am receiving a lot of inquiries from the Pure Gym PT page and website, where the only contact options are email me button or listing my phone number. So I'm missing phone calls and it's taken a lot of time to reply to emails and texts. Any ideas of how I can automate this? Don't think I can add a link tree and they don't list our social pages, etc. Many thanks.
Yeah. Autoresponder on your emails. First thing, so autoresponder saying something around thanks so much for email. If you're inquiring with a general question, I will get back to you within the next 24 hours. If you are emailing to inquire to work with me, and you can just put brackets pricing options programming etc., please follow the next steps, and that goes into your onboarding, link to your pre-consult, et cetera, et cetera. Phone call wise, a voice, a work-based voicemail. So again, thanks so much for your call, or you've reached X so-and-so, thanks very much for your call. Please leave a really short message with your name, number, preferred time to call you back, and a general topic of you calling or whatever. And I'll get back to you within the next 24 hours, 48 hours. And then just book out some time in your schedule, if you find this happening consistently, where you've got 10, 15 minutes potentially to in your day where you've got time to either call people back, or if they're texting you or whatever, messaging them back. So that's how I would. A deal.
What?
Is that fluff?
What the hell are you doing? It was a deal.
Huh?
You said a deal. It was a deal.
A deal?
Yeah. You fucking confuse me in the back.
I know what you're talking about.
You lost the plot. Go on, next question.
I've had a really shit month last month. had about eight clients leaving. Two are getting married in the next few months, can't afford it. One away to the Navy. One said she was in misery from DOMS, so refused to come back. A few saying they can't afford it because of Christmas. How do I stop myself taking a mental breakdown? Joking. Our therapy session is booked.
I've just read the question.
I've been panicking a little with the huge drop. What do you recommend I do?
I think, first of all, a level of acceptance that every personal trainer has moments of time that they've gone through or are going through something like this. So there's a level of acceptance. I think allowing yourself time to be able to reflect on it and sit down and learn from it, like what could have you potentially done better? What can you use as a bit of a learning opportunity? And that's not for me to dictate and say you could have done this better or that better, only you know. So what elements of this did you have control on? Obviously, the one going to the Navy, was there an opportunity for online? The guy's getting married, how could that? Like, just have a brainstorming session on what could you learn from that whole process? Because I think that's important, and it spins a negative to a positive more or less straight away. From there on out, it's then about putting a bit of a plan in place to make sure that you're aiming to bring more people into the business. And that starts with understanding what you need, i.e. making sure that you're hitting them break-even numbers, because that might have changed since the last time you did it. So go back to the drawing board. Right, what's my break-even now and my costs and all of that type of stuff? Then do a bit of goal setting on yourself, because look at, if your clients are demotivated and down and they're not getting results, the first thing we do is goal setting with clients. Do it on yourself right now. So go back through goal setting. So maybe go back through the goal setting webinar that we've done in the group program. I know you went through the group program, so maybe revisit that. And re-goal set yourself. Then once you've re-goal set yourself, quantify them goals into a target that you want to aim for revenue, and therefore sessions per month, sessions per week, sessions per day, and what the service looks like, right? So now you've got a focus, you've got a floor of your earnings, you've got a ceiling, you've got some targets, and hopefully you're a little bit more internally motivated to go and achieve it. And then it's about the inputs. Now, any personal trainer that's out there who feels insecure about losing clients or always feels like, yeah, that level of insecurity is normally because we haven't been proactive with our inputs for lead generation and marketing. So then what you need to do is look at your available time in your week and go, right, where do I want clients? And then you need to come up with a bit of a lead generation and marketing plan to bring people in to the business. So look back, what's worked for you in the past to bring people in, either repeat that, adjust it, tweak it, or do whatever. But make sure you put a very solid plan in place. Use this weekly check-in to make sure that plan works. Ask the questions in the group and all of that. You might want to do a video on your marketing plan so you could get some element of accountability and feedback, and me and Nick can feedback on it. But essentially, that's what needs to be done. Back to the drawing board, go back through break-even, go back through goals, quantify them, give yourself some targets, and then plan your marketing and lead generation to bring in consistent leads. And then that will not only make you feel better, but obviously it's going to bring in consistent leads. It might not do it right now, but if you be consistent over time, you're probably going to take on clients in December. And yes, ladies and gents, you as personal trainers can take clients on in December, despite what the little fuckwits say in the staff room, who are negative with a fixed mindset. The end. Happy with that, Nick?
You'll do. You said quantify.
What's up with that?
It's a big word.
Fucking knobber.
In addition, that is a focus on, but also maybe two quick wins. Have any clients of yours right now got any friends that are looking to get started with training? Second thing, reach out to any older clients. Two very simple actions. Don't take a lot of time whilst you're also investing your time, is what Ant's just gone over.
You can be very smart with your marketing. Like, we seem to be always about, right, gym floor, Instagram. Think about the clients inside your business that you've got left, like Nick's just said, and think about who is the one that's most well-connected. Who's the one? I heard this sort of thing at the weekend. It was just a really good reminder of how easy marketing can be if you can make it easier. So think about your clients that, I don't know, the loud mouth who can say a lot about you, in they're well-connected. One that's, I don't know, a hairdresser who's connected with different people. One who's very active on social. Get your clients to make sure that they're checking in every time they come in. So like they're on Instagram and they're checking in to say that they're with you as a personal trainer in your facility or whatever. Just that general awareness and using your clients like that can go a long way, because word of mouth and social proof is clearly two of the big drivers to bring in more revenue to your business. Good point. Great reminder, Nick. And it's on to the next question now.
Thanks so much.
Is it my turn, is it?
You just answered the last question.
Have you any advice for supporting an online client from an injury? Physio booked for Wednesday and current workout program is on hold until we find out what the issue is. Thanks so much.
Yeah, I think you're doing the right thing in regards to obviously getting to see a physio, have a consultation off the back of that. If you can, I'd always try and talk to the physio as well, because the message from the physio to the patient to you sometimes gets a little bit lost in translation. So I would take the opportunity, if you can, to speak to the physio by email or on a call. Then devise a plan off the back of that. I think goal setting is an important part of it. So you do another little mini consultation. And I think, you know, either way it goes, though, really dig down into the kind of focus areas, whatever that may be. It might mean focusing on a specific area, a specific movement pattern, you know, whatever they can do. Or it could mean that the actual exercise side of the program is based maybe potentially on just increasing their energy expenditure while they can't train, for example. On the other hand, you could be doubling down on their lifestyle factors, their behaviours, their nutrition. So there's lots of different things you can do, but it's all going to come off the back of just being inquisitive about what they want to achieve based on what they can, can't do, because it doesn't mean they have to just stop. So I think just affirmations is going to be really important, really positive outlook for moving forward. And if you can, I would highly recommend talking to the physio. I think that's about it. Anything to add, Antoni?
Not really. Have you? That was sounding like really deflated, but I'm just...
You got nothing.
Nick.
When moving from commercial to private gyms, what are the things PTs tend to struggle with most?
Well, the biggest thing most personal trainers struggle with most moving from a commercial gym to a private gym, but you don't have to worry about this for the person who asked the question, is normally their ego. That's the biggest thing that they struggle with. I would say the main thing is you will look back when you're in the private gym and regret not capitalizing on the sheer volume of members that you did have in the commercial gym and collecting data from them members and getting them into your world, i.e. email, social, or a closed Facebook group. So that's one of the biggest things I regretted, leaving a Fitness First for the studio that we went into. So I would say if you've got a bit of time, which I think you have, I would be relentless in building an audience from the gym that I can speak to, from that commercial gym, whilst I'm in the private gym. They normally underestimate the time because you've no longer got that huge captive audience of classes and inductions and volumes of people on the gym floor. That time you will have to find in your week now to really plan your marketing and have a really measured marketing campaign that includes how your clients can market for you, includes what the gym can do for you, includes what you do on social media, and includes the local area as well, and how that would tap in. So I would say there is normally a lot of personal trainers who neglect that leap and the, just the sheer volume of members that you have access to. I would say that's the main things that I regretted when I first jumped over. And I see a lot of personal trainers then regret and then struggle to manage. Anything you'd add to that, Nick?
No, just massively take advantage of what you've got right now. It's huge. It's massive.
The amount of PTs that have a chat to us who go into a private gym and then we see them 3, 6, 9 months later and go, Jesus Christ, I didn't know how good I had it in that commercial gym. I'm not saying I regret the move because I needed a kick up the ass to go and do something like that. But I wish I would have done X, Y, Z regards to data capture and stuff like that. It's the biggest regret. And I had it the same, exactly the same. That's it. Oh, well, Darwin's question. Give him some quick tips on how to generate leads for his online business, seeing as always COVID hit him.
With what you've got right now, look at the information you've got right now in the market you want to target, which will ultimately give you the messages that you want to put out, i.e. look at the problems they're facing, look at the struggles they're going through, look at what they're saying, look at what they're asking. And it effectively talk to your audience, answer their questions, give them short, sharp tips in varying different ways, from stories, polls, to grids, to IGTV, and invite them to engage. Like, base your measurement of success, I think Anne mentioned this last night, I think, on conversations, on people sharing your content with like-minded people, you know? So this is going to help me. I know someone who's struggling with this as well. I will share it. So that's the biggest thing to start with, the outcome. Be consistent, how many times to post. If you've got time right now, you can obviously invest time into that. But go with what's realistic. Anything in addition to that is a bonus. So if you haven't got or not sure about what your market is saying, we went through that on week one in regards to how to go out there and do market research. That's the very first thing. Yes, calls to action and what product you're positioning for people is important. But unless you're getting it, unless you're getting that engagement, unless you're talking to your audience and giving them some reason to check back in with you and to see what you're saying and see what you're posting and what's there tomorrow, etc., and create some excitement around it. It really doesn't matter what you're positioning because they're not going to buy it.
Hey, Drop the fucking mic, Nicholas. Great, great work, that. Great work. Fantastic.
Thank you.
We did have a question from Instagram, actually. Someone got in touch with regards to his branding. And I, the reason why I'm going to bring it up is because he was like, what do you feel is the best brand name? And I think a lot of people get, and he sent me the two things over, and I think a lot of people go through this. So like branding, I don't know, their logo, their business name, all of that type of stuff. And honestly, I just responded, the best thing for you to do is go and ask your audience. I think we try and solve all of that ourselves. And like, if you could, if you've got an audience on your platforms that will help you pick, and it's coming from the demographic that you want to, logos, brand name, themes, anything like that, go and ask them, because it increases engagement and it gives you an opportunity to interact as well. So I just thought I'd share that in case anyone else is going through that, watching, listening, all of that. Nick, it's been a pleasure. There were some great questions today. I think you were about an 8 out of 10.
You're about 6.
Frick. Have a great day, everyone. See you in a bit.
Bye-bye.